This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Health and Living Show. It's the Doctor in the House segment today because it's a Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And of course, consultant urologist Dr. George Lee is here with us, as he is almost every Friday.
For the last 11 years. Okay. Part of the furniture now.
Can't get rid of you.
You can try.
We wouldn't want to. Right. Today, George, we're talking about neuropsychiatry in Malaysia.
That's right. Yes. I'm excited.
Well, the Health Minister, Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, recently came out in the news saying that there's a lack of neuropsychiatrists working in our public sector in particular. We only have 4 in our public health system.
That's grossly deficient,
In Malaysia, serving a population of, 32 million. With the number of patients needing neuropsychiatric services expected to increase, we are talking to Dr. Chee Kok Yoon today, a consultant neuropsychiatrist at Hospital Kuala Lumpur, to dive into the importance of this field and the challenges in developing the profession. So if you have any questions, do call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, Dr. Chee.
Hi,
how are you today?
Afternoon. I'm good. Friday's always good.
Well, we're taking you away from one of the 4 in the country. So yeah. That's right.
It's like 25% is just gone.
That's right.
Here.
Yeah.
But to do something very important, I think, to help us understand what is neuropsychiatry and what do we need to do to develop this field. But I think we need to start with what is neuropsychiatry, because we're talking about neurology, psychiatry, psychology. Where does it come in?
That's right.
Yeah, neuropsychiatry is a very unusual or interesting specialty. So I think the easier way to talk about it is the interface between neurology and psychiatry. And also, for many people, it can consider there is you're dealing with people with the illness that falls between the gap of neurology and psychiatry. For example, if a person have a stroke and then subsequently have emotional distress, who should see the person, neurologist or psychiatrist? Because if the person with emotional distress go to see a neurologist, it's not really what the neurologist would do. It's actually in the world of psychiatry. But if they go to a psychiatry will say that this issue is strokes. So they don't manage people with strokes. So this group of patients, which is actually a large population of patients, will sort of fall in a gap that, you know, neither here nor there. So that's where neuropsychiatry is, for us to look into both conditions at the same time in terms of how would the neurological conditions relate to the mental health issue and vice versa as well. Mm-hmm. So we have this foundation of psychiatry. Therefore, we can understand the emotional distress of the mental health issue. Is it because of the direct cause of the neurological conditions? Or it is due to the disability caused by the neurological condition. So we have that sort of skill to differentiate them and therefore able to manage accordingly. So although it seems very niche area, but it is very much needed because, you know, looking at the number of people who has neurological disorder, the number of people who have strokes in this country is a lot. Not only that, number of people with head injuries. So you're talking about young people in their 20s, 30s with road traffic accidents.
Yeah.
So the neurosurgeon would have settled all the bleeding in the brain. Mm-hmm. But what happened after that? Now, a lot of them has behavioral issue, change in personality, their memory issue, who to manage them. Neurosurgeon will not manage them because it's not in their area. Psychiatrists have no idea what to do with them because they don't know how it's relation to the head injury. So that's where neuropsychiatrists come into the picture.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Are these predominantly the 2 demographic of patients you treat, the strokes and head injury patients?
No, actually we treat a large group of people. So in my center, we have specialized clinic So the common condition, we have a head injury or any traumatic brain injury. We have a specialized clinic just for this group of people.
Okay.
We have a clinic that specializes in Parkinson's disease.
Parkinson.
And movement disorders.
Okay.
We have a clinic specialized in young onset dementia. That means those people with dementia and below 65 years old.
Uh-huh.
So we have people that in the age of 40s.
I like the way you say young onset and below 65.
Yes, because the cutoff point is 65.
Yeah,
so we have people in their 40s with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have specialized clinic in dealing with people with epilepsy associated with mental health issues. But this is only the big chunk of the group patient we're seeing.
I mean, I'm glad you outlined them because you know, this cover a large populations out there.
Exactly.
I'm sure there are many, many people out there who are listening to the show are interested in your input in terms of whenever they have neurological condition with that added psychiatric or psychological problems and then how they can be managed by your good self.
One of the main issues is because when they have those conditions or problem, I think from what I understand from my patients is that they don't know where to go.
True.
Yeah, because there's as if, you know, should they go to a neurologist or psychiatrist? So they sort of got lost.
But typically, what has been the scenario? Are they being pushed back and forth?
Yes, exactly. A lot of times they will push back and forth, and or they just keep quiet and continue to suffer with the condition they have. So actually, I think definitely a lot of situations like this are underreported, and they do not know this is a condition that can be treated and can be managed both by the family and the patients. Mm.
So how do you work with the related disciplines? You know, with the neurologist or with a psychologist, for instance, what does that team setup look like?
So we have this multidisciplinary approach whereby in HKL, because we have neurosurgeon, neurologist, so we have these meetings that for certain complex cases, we will sit together and discuss the case together. So this is one of the way to basically bring in all the expertise in helping them. So give you one example would be when we have a people with head injury and with memory problem.
I'm sure there's quite a few number of cases that
actually,
you treat with
a lot
of head injuries, right?
Yeah.
And then they're young, productive individuals.
Exactly. We have people that was engineer and after the accident, they just can't even take care of themselves. And we have people that basically productive age group. So we group in people with the neurologists, we have psychologists in the hospital, we have occupational therapists that help to improve their functions. And then so we have this sort of group of people to help them so that we set goal for them to achieve. So this is more a goal directed. And we also include rehab physician as well because these are all the people have to be in.
Let's use that as an example of a journey of a patient. Somebody unfortunately involved in motor vehicle accident, head injury. The neurosurgeon would have sorted out that injury, evacuate the hematoma and then get the patients into recovery. And after that, how do we decide whether this patient goes to the neurologist or the neuropsychiatrist?
It depends how the patient's condition after that. So after the head injury, so there of course immediately a lot of them will have become more aggressive. A lot of them become agitated, the behavior become more temperamental.
Mm.
So and this is actually part of the recovery process of the brain. So this is something that we will expect them to have. So, and we normally do not treat them with medication so much. The problem is that when they see a psychiatrist, you know, it's commonly they will prescribe medication to calm them down, which is actually cause more side effects than not. So what we do is that we provide a lot of education to the family, how to use communication skill, how to use method so that we can avoid confrontations and give them time to settle down. So a lot of times they will improve by themselves. And then after like maybe 6 months, a year later, we look into their whether any chronic problem, long-term problem. And then we'll sort out the individual long-term issue. For example, is there a personality problem? Is there a cognitive problem? So if this cognitive problem, we have this rehabilitation for them. if it's something to do with personality, for example, we can actually use method to help them to overcome. One common issue is anger.
Mm.
They tend to get angry easily. A small little provocation get angry. So we will teach the family and the patient how to manage the anger by explaining the nature of it and also how to use certain technique. Like, for example, just like a traffic light, when the anger gradually increases, what can you do to avoid the anger being exploded, for example? So these are the techniques that we need to teach them so that they can have a rather normal life and so that their interpersonal relationship become improved. So this is what we do. So that's why we spend a lot of time with the person and the family. Not so much with just medication.
So you come in later on in the journey of a patient, because the acute phase, you would imagine that it's going to be a transient process.
Mm-hmm.
However, later on, that's when you come in to intervene and then offer therapy. Is that true?
Not exactly. It's that we hope to be at the earlier stage, because first, at the earlier stage, in the first few months after the injury, is the most important is do no harm to the person.
Okay.
So do no harm means that we do not prescribe any medication that's not necessary.
Mm.
We need to give them time to recover, so to prevent harm to the patient by other practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we provide in education to the family while managing this person at home, how should they do it so they reduce the family stress. So at the same time, we'll monitor the person throughout the next couple of months, because the rehabilitation required to be started as early as possible. The brain recovery takes about the first 1 year is the critical period. After a year later, whatever situation that's already occurred can't do much about it. So the first 1 year is very critical.
That's a golden period that you can intervene.
Exactly. So that's why it's always good to step in early. But unfortunately, a lot of referral comes rather late.
Yes, I was just going to ask that.
Yes.
And typically, what proportion of patients are you seeing within that 1 year period? And what's the reality?
I think in reality, 80% of them come to me after a year later. And so there's not much we can do, but we can still, I mean, it's not the end of the world. There's still a lot can be done. But if we can get them in as early as possible, like in the first 6 months, that'd be great.
Oh, you can't help it. There's only four of you.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's taken so long because they just can't find anyone to go to as well. And the severe lack of neuropsychiatrists in the country is something we're going to come back to. Mm. And what are the challenges in training and developing and encouraging more people to go into this sub-specialization? We are talking to consultant neuropsychiatrist Dr. Chee Kok Yoon today, as well as, of course, consultant urologist Dr. George Lee. We're discussing where are the neuropsychiatrists in Malaysia?
Where are they hiding?
If you have any questions, call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Ik. It's Friday afternoon and we're doing our Doctor in the House show. We're discussing, or rather we're asking the question, where are the neuropsychiatrists? We are asking one or four in our government health sector, Dr. Chee Kok Yoon, who's a consultant neuropsychiatrist with Hospital Kuala Lumpur. And as always with us on Fridays is Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist.
Yeah, urologist, not neurologist. There's a slight difference there. Always people
you
ask
always
me in the party.
To.
That's right. You have to clarify that. I look after the different brain.
If you have any questions, do call us 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Chee, you've mentioned that a large proportion of the issues you deal with are coming out of stroke patients, for instance, hit injuries due to probably vehicle accidents being the main cause, Parkinson's, some form of dementia. And these are all incredibly common. Stroke would be on the increase with the kind of burden of non-communicable diseases we have today. And yet we only have four, we'll keep coming back to this.
Yeah.
We only have four neuropsychiatrists working in the government sector. That's two in KL, one in Penang and one in Johor.
Yes, exactly.
Why are there so few of you? How are you coping with the burden of patients that you must be getting?
Oh, I don't know how to cope. just cope as it is. The number has always been small, actually. Mm-hmm. If you look at in overseas, for example, in Australia. Okay, let's talk about Asia. There's not many countries has neuropsychiatrists, clinical neuropsychiatrists. So we have four in Malaysia. I don't remember anyone in Thailand, not in Singapore, not in Philippines. Then probably the next nearest is Australia.
Not in Singapore?
Singapore, no.
No, okay. That's interesting.
There's no so service as a big one, actually. So the nearest pretty much is in Melbourne. There's the nearest you can find with the full service of neuropsychiatry. So it's indeed to be quite small. And also the training of it is a bit, it's quite difficult in a sense that it has to be a psychiatrist first.
Okay, because you are a psychiatrist.
Yes.
Who to has begin an with. Interest in neurology, or do you have to also have neurological training?
No, it's a psychiatrist. I'm a psychiatrist that have interest in neuropsychiatry.
Okay.
So I'm not a neurologist. So this is a bit difference here, because in neurologists, they manage not just the brain, they manage, they look after the nerve system as well.
Correct.
So for me, I look into the brain mechanism as how it related to mental health issues.
Right.
So I have some knowledge in terms of brain disorder, but my knowledge will not be at the same bar as a neurologist.
Mm-hmm.
So I have both sides, but more on a psychiatry.
Mm-hmm. That's why you are a neuropsychiatrist rather than psychiatric neurologist.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Because we always put the your specialty of dominant in the back, right?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So, as I say, to be a neuropsychiatrist, the person has to be a psychiatrist first. So that's already a 4 years training and master.
Yes. And because then, you need your basic medicine first.
Yes, exactly. So I'm quite old, actually.
Okay. Of course, don't look it.
Yeah, right. Really old by now, actually.
Despite, serving 8 million population per neuropsychiatrist, right?
Okay. Yes. So, and then further, it'd be 3 years training in neuropsychiatry.
Mm.
So 4 years in master program for psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, 3 years in neuropsychiatry. So in that 3 years, the first 2 years will be in the country and 1 year in overseas with recognized center, which I went to Melbourne for the training.
Yeah.
So the number of years involved is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as you say, it depends on interest. It's like, not everybody can be a urologist.
No,
it has to be certain interest as well.
Yes.
So there are so many other subspecialties in psychiatry. So without the proper interest, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, it begs a question. I'm sure many listeners out there are asking this question. If many countries survive even without, their healthcare infrastructure survive even without neuropsychiatries, can we actually do away without neuropsychiatry? Because like in Singapore, obviously functioning reasonably well, the next nearest place there that has an establishment, do you think many people will say that in a healthcare setting, you probably will have neurologists who actually have interest in psychiatry anyway, or psychiatrists who have interest in neurology, but not necessarily having that formal training.
I mean, in a way, before I'm here, that there's no neuropsychiatrist as such a way that work on this group of people. So people have survived before I arrive. So the difference is that I think in terms of standard of care, so with the general psychiatrist, if they encounter a person with stroke and then depression, so they will manage depression as it is. But when the case, a condition become more complicated, so that become an issue.
Of course.
Yeah, so that's where the neuropsychiatrist will be important. So when we arrive, when there's such a service available, the area where it used to be complicated and overlooked will be picked up. So I think that's where the purpose of neuropsychiatrists is. And we manage people of conditions that otherwise cannot be managed by general psychiatrists or a general neurologist.
Can you name an example how such complicated cases that you are handling? Let's say, for example, obviously you can't be serving all the populations with the head injury, with the early onset dementia. You are working on a referral basis.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, for example, a district general hospital in Kota Bharu is managing somebody. Then they felt that this is beyond their remit of expertise and refer to you. Can you name an example of a typical scenario like that?
For example, I think the, let's say a 40-year-old woman who has thought to have depressions because a person doesn't talk so much, become quieter, and then less interacting with other people, but you know, doesn't appear sad, you know, not crying, but just the whole personality become much quieter and not refuse but less leaving the house. So we have actually such real case before, many cases like this, and was managed as depressions because it does appear like this person is depressed. And so went to see a general psychiatrist and treated for depression, but the person never get well. So in the usual day, they would think that this person probably not responding to medication and change the medication again and again, and eventually think that this is the end of it. So what happened with this particular person, that when the neurologist noticed something is not right, when somehow or other, then the neurologist will send the patient to me. And then we've gone through the whole scenario again and reassess the person in a much more sophisticated, comprehensive manner. We found that this person has dementia. Actually, this person has Alzheimer's disease in their 40s. And then this is why the personality change started first, thought to be depression. So that's where the neuropsychiatrist comes in, to really tease out the features very carefully and to identify. So it'd be like a detective job. And then give the proper diagnosis, and then subsequently need the proper management.
And that will be quite difficult for the psychiatrist who initially treat the patient to tease out?
Yes.
But it would be incumbent on the psychiatrist to recognize that this is something beyond what they can, or it's not typical depression.
Yes. The thing is that the psychiatrist will need to have a certain understanding in terms of what are the cognitive aspect of it, which is not consistent with a depression. So when the person come to us, we will reassess the person in a comprehensive way. We also will do neuroimaging. So we have this ability and skill to go through the MRI and then look into the salient features. And then we will assess the cognitive function in much more salient features, and then to compare whether this is consistent with the depression. So it's a lot of work in between. So take a long time, and then gradually we pull all the information together and come to the conclusion that this person is in fact Alzheimer's disease, for example.
Okay.
That's what we do.
And speaking of complex cases, we have a message on WhatsApp, and I wonder if this is an example of such a complex case. If somebody has a brain tumor because of the tumor, has problems with sex addiction, and when the tumor is removed,
the obsessions appear to disappear.
Would that be?
Yeah, exactly. This would be some sort of the case that should refer to us before things turn to be, you know, this situation.
Obviously, you know, I always think about, psychiatry is obviously mind, neurology is brain, but you have the best of both worlds because you are
the
mind. That's
interesting, isn't it?
That's right. Okay, because you know, if you actually look at neuropsychiatry, right, in some way, one is perhaps looking at that emotion side of things, the other one is look at that physical connections in the brain. So. You know, for this particular case that was highlighted, you know, as a typical, as a potential scenario, 40-year-old person who turned into somebody out of character personality and obviously involved in unethical behavior that that got him arrested and also all sorts of things. I mean, how would that, who would think in a million year that this might be due to a brain tumor?
Yes. It's very true because, you know, this of course is quite extreme case that we're looking at. We have a person who have similar brain conditions and then also have a lot of uncontrolled sex behavior. And actually the certain of the condition can be treated mm-hmm. in a way. And for this case, for example, is that the tumor likely to be the one responsible for the change in personality. And if this person was to, you know, refer to us earlier, we can actually make a proper assessment and then treated him earlier or mm-hmm. her earlier. You know, hopefully the outcome will not be like this, that evicted from the house yeah. kind of things. You know, a lot of unnecessary complication comes about.
Now we begin to understand your Sherlock Holmes mentality.
Yeah.
Really.
That's quite fun, isn't it? Yeah.
But then coming back to the issue of, you know, bringing up the numbers in your subspecialty, you know, what will it take to bring in more people into your training, your field?
I think it's to spread the interest, because a lot of people, when they heard the word neuropsychiatry, they find it, wow, like something so high up, you know. So, of course, the word is quite heavy. So actually, although this sounds so heavy, but actually it's very common. It's a kind of specialty that require to manage a lot of common things, for example. So that's why we have this, you know, every year we have this neuropsychiatry masterclass in order to promote interest among the psychiatrists. Mm-hmm. Let them understand what we do, what do we do, and then, you know, and if they have the interest, then they can come to us. And in fact, actually, we have done quite not too bad, because at the moment, we have four neuropsychiatrists in the country, in the government sector, and we have four in training at the moment. Mm. So after they finish training, we will have eight.
Right.
And, after the 3 years of the additional.
Yeah, so it's getting
100%
more.
Increment.
Yes, yeah, it's very good. So,
how about the private sector?
Private sector, there is no neuropsychiatrist. There are two in the university, actually. One with IMU.
Okay.
Yes, he does some work with the Seremban Hospital. Mm-hmm. I think one is in, I can't remember exactly where is it. I think
so, Trungkan. Six currently in the country.
Yes.
And another four to
coming,
come.
Yeah. Exactly.
But when it comes to training, the issue is manpower, because people like yourself, you have to, you know, devote your time to training the ones who are coming in.
Yes, it's quite hard, because neuropsychiatrists can't survive alone in a way. We work in a team.
Of course.
So we have to be in a place where there are neurologists, neurosurgeons, neuroradiologists, facilities that enough, psychologists, in order to function properly.
And rehab physicians,
exactly.
And also you know, other healthcare providers as well.
Yeah. So even though certain hospital has neuropsychiatrists, if they don't have the facility to support the service, basically this kind of pointless as well.
Of course.
So that's why even though the number may not be so small eventually, but each hospital have to promote their service to support such a specialty.
Yeah, you need the entire environment.
Exactly.
Nobody
can work alone.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are talking about neuropsychiatry today and how we can further develop this field in Malaysia. We do have a caller on the line. If you can stay on the line, we'll get to you after this quick break. Dr. Chee Kok Yoon, consultant neuropsychiatrist from Hospital Kuala Lumpur, and Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with us. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living. It's our Doctor in the House show today, and we are asking the question, where are the neuropsychiatrists? We have in the studio with us one of six neuropsychiatrists in the country, Dr. Chee Kok Yoon. He's with Hospital Kuala Lumpur. And of course, George Lee, consultant urologist, is in the conversation as well. We have been keeping a couple of callers on the line, so we will get to them now. Good afternoon, LTY.
Hi, LTY.
Hello, good afternoon, Dr. George and Dr. Chee.
Hi.
How are both of you?
Yeah, very good.
Good.
You have
okay,
a question?
Chee, my question is this. You are most of the time treating post-traumatic patients or some patient with mentally problem, right, Dr. Chee?
Yeah.
But what about for normal elderly people like me? I'm 76. But you just say I'm still very young, see, compared with others. But I may not know tomorrow, right? Now, my question is this. As an elderly, normal elderly, with no mental problem, no physical problem, no emotional problem, no psychological problem. How can an elderly man improve himself? Thank you.
Thank you very much, LTY. Okay.
Oh, great questions, right? Okay, he's in good state at the moment. Yeah. How can he improve himself to maintain that state of state of mind?
I think the most important thing is to be active and maintain a healthy lifestyle. The thing is that although he may be in an elderly age, but
of a good vintage.
Yes, I think I'll put that. I think it's the main thing is to continue the active lifestyle and continue what he has been doing, because whatever he's doing now seems to be keeping him well. There's no reason to change.
Yes.
So yeah, if there's any change that he noticed or noticed by his family members, I think that would be the good time to refer to any doctors that he knows.
So LTY, my advice is play lots of Sudoku and stop smoking.
And I would think LTY should also be glad you don't need the services of somebody like Dr. Chi.
Exactly.
And we also have Robert on the line. Good afternoon, Robert.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hi,
Robert.
Hi. Correct me if I'm wrong. I understand that we have a neuropsychiatry, an established neuropsychiatry institute in University Science Malaysia.
Okay.
And then there's another one in Singapore, a neuropsychiatry institute headed by the Lee Kuan Yew's daughter.
Okay, we'll answer that on that.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Yeah.
Lee Kuan Yew's daughter.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm not sure, but the thing is, we're talking about clinical neuropsychiatry, so means that there are neuropsychiatrists who does research, like in PhD, for example. So it's important to differentiate a neuropsychiatrist that does PhD and more of research-based rather than a clinical-based. As far as I know, I don't know any of the neuropsychiatry center in Penang. Also, as far as I know, in Singapore, there's also no clinical neuropsychiatry center so far, but, you know.
Probably just in academic basis.
Yeah. Yes.
And we've been talking about, you know, increasing numbers in terms of the specialty. But other than the human resource issue, what else can we improve in terms of the provision of neuropsychiatric services?
I think when you talk about services, it's very important, because it does not the number of neuropsychiatrists only, because as I said earlier, neuropsychiatry is a field that very clearly indicate that nobody can work alone, and we always work in a team. So therefore, we also need the number of other supportive personnel to be there. For example, clinical psychologists, they are very important in helping us to look into the psychological aspect of the person, the cognitive assessment. We also need people that help to improve the functions.
Mm-hmm.
For example, occupational therapists, they are very important. These are the people that the number is still small, and also they may not be fully trained in condition that we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, from what you're saying, is that we need to develop in our country that multidisciplinary team of neurological and psychiatric services.
Yes.
However, why would our Ministry of Health single-handedly just point out that we need more neuropsychiatrists? You know, is there any specific reason that you understand? Like you highlighted that we can have 10,000 neuropsychiatrists, but if we don't have enough neurosurgeon and don't have enough neurologist, we're back to square one.
I think one of the reasons, because the number of neuropsychiatrists is indeed extremely small for a country with this population, with the disease burden that's so huge.
And Dr. Chi needs to be able to go home and be with his family.
Exactly. And I have to leave by 5. Can't they? So I think the number, you know, of course, the service provision need to be as good as possible. But if you have, like, for example, enough occupational therapists, but there's no neuropsychiatrist, again, it's going to be a problem.
So there's kind of like the racial issues that, you know, the current issues. Was there any context that the minister made such statement? Or was it with regards to any specific statistics that he was making the statement?
I think the one of the main reasons he made a statement, because, you know, when he aware the number is about 4 in the government sector, and then when he looked back at the need is so overwhelming, I think that makes him a kind of a shock as well. You know, we sort of as if we overlook that, you know, this sort of lopsided situation, the needs is so huge, and many people overlook this need.
Yes.
And then they realize, oh, actually there are specialty people who actually can look after this group of patients. Mm. And then that's where the urgency that comes in.
If you were to advise him, mm-hmm. how would you, you know, what are the measures that can be taken in order to rectify such disparity?
I think one thing is, because there's always, I mean, one way is, of course, to increase the number of training centers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing, because we need more training centers in order to train them, as well as to allow more locations for them to be trained. Because at this moment in the country, HKL would be the best training center, but it's only one training center. And they need to have more than just one training center. And, you know, we can't, only two neuropsychiatrists in one center can't possibly train everybody.
Mm.
And also we do think that it is important for them to be also trained in other well-established centers, like those in Melbourne or Sydney, that give them the opportunity to have the good exposure to have a proper skill. Because neuropsychiatrists require skills. It's not just knowledge in order to help people that it needs.
Has the minister committed to any plans, budget allocations and things like that?
Not that I know at the moment. Okay. I think I have to ask him.
You can ask him on air right now.
He's probably going to call in soon.
Just to give you an idea of the need that Dr. Chi was talking about, it was reported that at least 1,500 patients will receive neuropsychiatric services at Hospital Kuala Lumpur by the year end. Is that right?
Oh, I think that's for the ECT, electroconvulsive therapy.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I think what happened is the neuropsychiatry service in HKL,
mm-hmm.
we also include electroconvulsive therapy as part of our service.
Okay.
I think that's what it means by that. Okay. The number of patients that require that service high.
So then in terms of overall neuropsychiatry services, what's the patient load looking like?
We don't really have a statistic on that, but just make it quite, I think one of the way you can consider is the waiting list. It's one of the way we can gauge whether how the waiting list to a new case waiting list to see us is can be up to 3 to 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's quite long to begin with.
And you can't even bypass that because there's no private neuropsychiatrist available, right?
In a way, yes. Mm. And also because we do need to spend a lot of long time with each patient.
Yeah, because from what you described earlier, that the actual, first of all, the diagnosis itself takes a lot of detective works. And then on top of that, the therapy will involve family, and it's more a long-term process in order to help the patient to get back to the road of recovery.
Exactly. It's not something that we can give a pill and they get well. We thought a lot about a non-pharmacological approach.
Understood.
To help them.
Lily is asking on WhatsApp, what's your advice to encourage medical students to get into the neuropsychiatry field?
Great question.
First, they pass exam. First, have to pass the exam. And then,
we would hope that's the bare minimum. Yes.
Yes, and then they have to be a psychiatrist first.
Okay.
I think it is important to have a good psychiatry foundations. Then only they can be a neuropsychiatrist. So in terms of developing the interest, while they've been trained as a psychiatrist, they can come to do attachment with us in HKL,
mm-hmm.
to have an exposure to understand what do we do. Because basically, without seeing what we do, nobody will understand what exactly that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Then with that, they may be quite okay.
But actually, more in terms of encouraging them to see this as a career, a rewarding and a viable career. What would your advice be there?
I think rewarding career.
Not monetarily, by the way.
I think.
What satisfaction do you get?
Yeah, what makes you wake up in the morning and say, I love my job. I just cannot wait to get it to...
Just like George does.
Yeah,
every
that's
day.
Right. Exactly. Every morning, you know, you get to your office and say, look, that 8 million people that I'm treating, you know.
I think one of the things that I can provide closure to a lot of people, like, for example, you know, give you one example of one of my recent clients. So what the husband said to me was, you know, he had to, like, as if travel around the world in order to find to find out what's wrong with his wife. Mm. When he said travel around the world, it's like, you know, he has to go to different hospitals, seeing different doctors, different specialty for more than a couple of years, and then they have no idea what's wrong with her, treat her with different medication, which was actually not the right one. Then accidentally ended up in HKL, and then we found a diagnosis for his wife. The kind of the closure is important, and for the family, so now they know what's wrong with them, and that gave me the kind of satisfaction because I can help them with that sense. So now they can move forward to plan. As long as I don't know what happened to their own loved one and family, nobody can plan the next step. So that's one thing. Of course, a lot of conditions that traditionally thought that is nothing can be done, and we help the family, and they improve. It may not be improved to the level that they used to be like before, but any improvement give them the kind of satisfaction, you know, that there's a hope there. So I have people who used to be initially, another example is another head injury that first came to see me in just on a trolley, can't move. Now he can actually give a talk to a public audience. You know, the kind of satisfaction that you get for how much they can improve with our help. I think that is, you know, worth every single, you know, sweat and blood of it, out of it.
Wow.
Yes. That's a great message, Dr. Chi.
It is a great
and
message.
And George, final message?
You know, well, actually, to be honest with you, when that question was asked, how do you inspire the next generation to do what you do? I was expecting you to say that detective work every day that you're, you know, gauging around and trying to find. And I am really, really touched and also very inspired by you saying closure, because many times people don't realize how important it is to find that diagnosis.
Yes. Yes.
When you are lingering in limbo and not really understood, and also being misunderstood, it's a real trauma for a lot of people.
And possibly being dismissed.
Correct,
as well.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, everybody just keep going on about this is all in the mind. And coming to you, and when you give that closure, I really think that's a good word that we don't use a lot in medicine. And I think with that closure, then they can move on and move forward with that hope. And I really think that is a really good message for the listeners out there.
Thank you very much to the both of you. That was Dr. Chi Kok Yun, consultant neuropsychiatrist from Hospital Kuala Lumpur, and of course, consultant neurologist Dr. George Lee. We've been discussing the field, the neglected field of neuropsychiatry in Malaysia. This is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.